Well, it's good to be together this morning, and I appreciate Jeremy's words about the Lord's table. And as we are trying to do the best we can to follow the scriptures and meet and keep each other safe, that's a very good observation that we need to reflect upon the Lord's sacrifice, his death, his going to the cross, the way that he was willing to do on our behalf, and suffer and die in the way that was so painful for him, and the great love that God showed by that, and raising him from the dead. God has provided this for us so that we not just come together and go through the motions of this as a ritual, but that we really are helped to remember his death. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And I'd like to invite you to open your Bible this morning now to the book of Ecclesiastes and chapter 6. And we're going to continue our study there in Ecclesiastes this morning. And it is a book that is very powerful. It is a book that has a message here for us that is very relevant to what we are going through and the times that we're living in. So one of the reasons I chose to give lessons on Ecclesiastes, because I feel it is so relevant to everything that is happening today. And as we've pointed out here, the preacher who describes himself in that way said that he was the son of David. He was the king of Israel in Jerusalem. So it really can only point to one person. That would be Solomon. And as he is sharing and recording his observations of life, he is really doing that so that we might have a proper understanding of life. And there are many questions that each one of us has about life, and we want to have a proper understanding of life. And so Solomon, I believe we are blessed, very blessed, that he recorded these things for us in the way that he did, under the inspiration of God, that is able to help us understand issues and challenges that we face in everyday life. He pointed out the fact that there is life under the sun, that we live and that we live here on this earth, and it's possible for a person to live here on this earth, and that is all they perceive, is that we are creatures who live here on earth, and the sun is above us, but we do not make the connection that there is a God who is on the other side beyond the sun, who created this life for us. And we can make the mistake of just living on an earthly basis. And so he is saying that it is all as vanity and striving after the wind. And there is a sense of emptiness. There is a sense of meaningless of life when we approach it that way. But as he came into the third chapter of Ecclesiastes, we see that he began to talk about the purpose, and that there is a purpose in everything that happens, and that God is behind this, and that God has set eternity in the hearts of mankind, and that as we look at life and we begin to ask questions, we need to understand and have confidence that God has a purpose in this life that he has created us to live here on earth under the sun, but that he intends that we would have a relationship with him in life. And the injustices and things that we see that are wrong in the world, there is an understanding that we can have that God is going to deal with these in the proper time, and that He will eventually bring about that justice that seems missing sometimes when we live here in the world as we experience it. So in chapter 5, as we saw last week, Solomon talked actually there about that when we go up to the house of God, we need to walk carefully. And that as we come into the presence of God and to worship Him and to draw near to God, that we need to do that with willing to listen. Let your words be few, he says, so that we would come to worship God, we would have a reverence of God, and that we would come with an intention of willingness to listen to what God has to say, with the thought that we are going to then obey that in our life and conform to His will and submit to His will. But he talked about the fact that there still remains to be many oppressive things happening in the world that is troubling to us. And he said that we should not really be surprised by this, because man, given the fact that we live in a world that is cursed and that has fallen from God and is sinful in many ways, that it shouldn't really surprise us that when we see rulers and others that are in power, that there is going to be an abusiveness of their authority and their power. They will take this and use it to their own advantage. So that shouldn't really surprise us when we see that happening in the world. And he pointed out the fact that what we need to do then really is to learn to develop, to have wisdom in our life. We need a wisdom as we live this life, and we need to have that wisdom in a way that we sometimes are very restrained and patient in our conclusions, and we don't act hastily and we don't get angry at every little thing that happens, because we understand that God is providentially in control and that He has a purpose. He's working things out. And sometimes we need to wait and see what God is going to work out, how He's going to work things out in the world that we live in. One of the temptations that we have as we live here in this world is the temptation that if we can have more riches, that riches are going to provide for us the meaning and the satisfaction and the enjoyment of life that we are seeking. And Solomon is saying that these cannot do that in and alone of themselves. That riches and wealth, these things that we sometimes desire to have those, but they do not satisfy and they do not bring the lasting satisfaction that we really need for our lives. So one of the things that Solomon has been advocating is throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, the preacher, he is saying that there's nothing better in life for a person than to eat and to drink and to enjoy the fruit of one's labor and to rejoice and enjoy and live in that moment that God gives us, that brief time that we have here on earth, to learn to enjoy the blessings and the gifts that God gives us, and recognize that this is a gift of God. Well, we come now today to chapter 6 of Ecclesiastes, and we're going to continue there, and we see that Solomon has some more things that he is going to say to us here about this very issue of riches. But then he's going to move on from that, and he's going to talk more about the fact that in our lives, we must learn to trust God, that we must realize that the reason that riches do not fulfill us and satisfy us is because that the one who is able to give us these things is still missing from our lives. And that if these are really seen as a gift from God, we need to not dwell upon the gift themselves, but the giver of the gifts, the one who is beyond that, who placed us here and who is giving us these gifts. We need to devote ourselves and learn to trust in Him to have. And that is where we will find the joy, and that is where we will find the true lasting fulfillment of life that we are created to enjoy and to have here on this earth. So as he begins here in chapter 6, we see that he is continuing to talk about the emptiness of riches in and of themselves. that those do not bring lasting satisfaction to us if we have them without a relationship with God in our life. So he says again here in chapter 6 and verse 1, he said, "There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. A man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor, so that he lacks nothing for himself of all he desires, yet God does not give him power to eat of it, but a foreigner consumes it." He said, this is vanity, and it is an evil affliction. So he's pointing out the fact that there is this is an observation that he has made in life, that there are people who God has blessed them with riches, with the ability to have riches and honor and wealth. And yet he does not give them the ability to eat it, or in other words, to enjoy it. So he acknowledges the fact and recognizes that those two things are both God-given. The fact that a person is able to have riches is given by God. That is a blessing, a gift that God gives. But it is also a gift from God to give that person the ability to enjoy those things that he has given. So if one has the gift of the riches, but he does not have the gift that God gives to enjoy those riches, it is an empty possession that he has. It is vanity and an evil affliction. Now he's thinking here about a person, obviously, who does not really have a relationship with God in his life. And that is in contrast with the one that he ended by talking about in chapter 5 and verse 18 through 20. When he talked about the fact that it is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life, which God gives him, for it is his heritage. And he talked about the fact that there is a person who can have these blessings that God gives them, and they can eat them and enjoy them because they recognize that they are coming from God. But there's another type of individual that God does bless them in many ways, and they have everything that you could possibly really want to have in the way of this life, and yet they do not have the ability to enjoy those things. And one of the main reasons is because they do not acknowledge that they come from God. They may look at them and they say, "I have earned these things in my own hands," and it is not God, and they do not ever acknowledge or think about God. So they have these riches, but they don't have the ability to enjoy the things, because that also is something that is a gift that is given to them by God. So he said, this is a grievous thing. This is something that is evil, that is vanity, that he has seen happening here on the earth. And so no matter how great the blessings a person have, they can't be enjoyed in and of themselves without understanding the one who gives them to us in the proper way. Well, he went on to say in verse 3 through 5 here, he said, "If a man begets 100 children and lives many years, so that the days of his years are many, but his soul is not satisfied with goodness, or indeed he has no burial, I say that a stillborn child is better than he is. For it comes in vanity and departs in darkness, and its name is covered with darkness. Though it has not seen the sun or known anything, this has more rest than that man, even if he lives 1,000 years twice, but he has not seen goodness. Do not all go to one place?" So even if a man lives to be 1,000 years, 2,000 years old, and he has 100 children, and he has blessings and honor, and he has all of these different things that life can give, and these are the finest things that life has to offer to us, and he may have all of those things to the full extent, at the maximum, but if he does not have what he needs to have in his life, and that is a connection with God and a relationship with the blesser and the giver of life, then it is vanity and it might even be better for this man if he had never been born. And that's a dismal way to look at life in that sense. And yet there is some reality and some hard truth there that he is bringing forth when he puts it in those terms for us, that if you're going to get all these things in life and yet you do not even understand that these come from God, then what good have you accomplished by even being born and given a name? And so he says, this man, he might end up not even having a burial when he dies. His life is so empty. He has all these riches, and he has a large family, and he has so many good things. He lives a long life, and yet, really, his life is empty when you look at it. So that is one of the drawbacks of riches that so many fall into, and they make that mistake of thinking that if we can just have those riches, we'll be so happy, we'll have everything we need in life. And yet they miss the one thing that life needs to have in order to have true enjoyment. So continuing in verse 7, he points out the fact that without God, we can't be satisfied in this life. We're not going to find satisfaction. He says, all the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet the soul is not satisfied. For what more has the wise man than the fool? What does the poor man have who knows how to walk before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of desire. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. So he's pointing out here that apart from God, there really is no advantage to wisdom over being a fool. If there's a certain wisdom that people can have, but if they still do not understand God and the place that God is to have in our lives, then even the wise man is not really any advantage over being a fool. Because he is pointing out the fact that this also is vanity and grasping for the wind. Even though he has wisdom, he doesn't seem to have the wisdom that he should have from that. And that is the wisdom, that true wisdom, that he would understand that there is a God. So he says, it's better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of desire. We have the ability that God has given us with our eyes to see the world around us and to see those things and enjoy them and to see that this is the work of God. This is the beautiful creation of God, and we can see with our eyes, and it's obvious for us to do that, but it's possible, on the other hand, that what we have is the wandering of the desire, and that as we have our eyes tied here and we are constantly looking and there's something else that we're missing, and how can I get hold of these other things that are out there? And so therefore we are not really seeing with the eye the true blessing that life is that God has given for us. We're reminded of Eve in the Garden of Eden, that here was God who had placed them in the Garden of Eden, and they had everything possible that they could possibly need. And yet God had said to them, there is one tree in the midst of the garden that I will not have you eat of this tree, for in the day that you eat of it, you will surely die. And yet in Genesis chapter 3, when Satan came and presented the temptation to her, and he said, is God really not wanting you to have knowledge of good and evil like God has? He doesn't want you to be able to have this. And so it says that Eve looked upon the tree, that it was desirable, it was delightful to the eye. And therefore she took of the fruit and ate of it, and it was the wandering of her desire that led to her downfall. Rather than just being able to walk and look and see, and what a wonderful place God has given us to live here in the Garden of Eden, and we can eat of any fruit in the garden. And yet the wandering of her desire was that one thing that God had told them they couldn't have. She wanted to have that, and that is how sin entered into the world. Many times it's that same wandering of the eyes, the wandering of the desire, that leads us down the wrong path. It leads us into the area of life where we cannot find satisfaction. We cannot find happiness and joy. So he says, for all the labor of man is for his mouth, and it's for us to be able to eat and have food and the basic necessities of life, but the soul is not satisfied. And the reason that soul is not satisfied is because the missing piece here, the missing part of the equation, is we're not making the connection with our Creator who placed us here and gives us these blessings that we have. So apart from God, what advantage is the wise over the fool? So he continues and he says in verse 10, he says, whatever one is, he has been named already. For it is known that he is man, and he cannot contend with him who is mightier than he. Since there are many things that increase vanity, how is man the better? For who knows what is good for man in life all the days of his vain life, which he passes like a shadow? Who can tell a man what will happen after him under the sun? Well, his point here is that only God can explain life. And whatever one is, he has been named already. Well, we were named in the beginning that we are man. God named us this when he created us. He said, this is Adam. He comes from the soil. He is man. And so from the very beginning, God told us what our identity is, and we cannot change that. We cannot argue with God. We cannot contend with God and somehow change the way that we have been created. And we have limitations. We need to understand that there's limitations to the way God has created us. We have been placed here by God. And so there's certain things that we cannot change and we cannot know. Which one of us knows what is good for a man in his life? We don't know that. In and of ourselves, and we do not know what is going to happen after us. We cannot look into the future. God has the ability to do these things, but we do not. And so therefore, God is the one who can help us to understand life. But man sometimes wants to sit here and argue with God. And he, one way of translating this in verse 11, he says, when words increase, vanity increases. It's another way of saying that we can sit here and argue with God all we want to, but it's not going to change a thing. We're not going to win that one with God because God named us man. He put us here on this earth and he placed these limitations upon us, and therefore we do not in and of ourselves have the ability to live life and find all the answers and find all the meaning to life and know what is going to happen down in the future after we have been here on this earth, unless God reveals them to us. So we need God in our life is the point that he is trying to establish here with us. And as he thinks about this, he is showing that there is a value then in wisdom, that we need to have wisdom in life. And wisdom is something that is difficult to define sometimes. It is difficult and it comes through hard lessons that we live in life. It's not something that we just go down and we, you know, put our money in the slot and out comes wisdom. It doesn't happen that way to us in life. Life is a school of hard knocks in many ways. And wisdom comes the hard way. It comes to us through learning those lessons that life has to teach us. And sometimes there's only one way that you can learn that lesson in life, and that is through experiencing things that are unpleasant in your life. Sometimes those things that we would rather avoid and not experience personally are the very things that can teach us true wisdom in life. So he says, a good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. Better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by a sad countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. He's pointing out the fact here then that as we go through life, sometimes the things that are more sobering in life that are going to really benefit us the most. It's not the laughter and the mirth and the frivolity of life. Those things are not really going to teach us the lessons of wisdom. It's going to be when we go to the house of mourning that we are going to learn those lessons. And so he says, a good name, a good reputation is better than having expensive perfume. You know, sometimes people in those days, they really valued expensive perfume. And we read of the woman that Jesus, she sold the precious ointment and she poured it out over the body of Jesus. And that was a very special act that she made for him. But he is saying that a good name is better than precious ointment. It's better to have a good reputation than to have expensive perfume in your wardrobe there somewhere. And how do you get a good reputation? Well, by showing wisdom in your life. You have to have wisdom to have a good reputation. You don't get that good reputation just by going to parties all the time and laughing and merriment and all of these things that have no real substance to them. Now he's saying that the day of death is better than the day of one's birth. So in reality, he's saying it's better to go to a funeral than it is to a birthday party. And birthday parties are great because we went to Ezra, had a birthday party the other day, and he's 7 years old. And that's pretty cool to be 7 years old and to have your birthday party and open some presents. That's pretty fun thing to do. And Solomon is saying that, you know what, it's better to go to a person's funeral than it is to go to a birthday party. It's better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men. That's what's going to happen to every one of us. One of these days, there's going to be a funeral, and there's going to be a hearse, and it's going to be taking a casket out to the cemetery. And they're going to go out there, and they're going to lower that cemetery, that casket down in that grave. And there's going to be one person that doesn't come back. And one day that person is going to be me. And that's a very sobering thought. And that's why he says we need to go to the house of feasting, because that is something we need to consider. We need to think about that. And that's one way we're going to gain wisdom in life. He says, sorrow is better than laughter, for by a sad countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. So wisdom, sometimes we learn those lessons the hard way. Sobering things. To become wise, one must experience suffering, trials, hard times. They're sobering. They make us face reality, the hard reality of life. We face those things when we come up face to face. And a good place to do that is a funeral. And you know what? We're having a lot of funerals right now. And some people aren't even getting a funeral. It's like it said about the man in the last chapter, that here you have a man that has wealth and he has all of these things, and when he dies, he doesn't get even a burial. And sometimes today it's because he got COVID. And people say, well, I don't want to go to that funeral. That might come right out through the casket and take hold of me. And so what we're going to do is we're going to have a memorial sometime next year. But there's an opportunity that we have when there is a funeral to take a sobering look at life that you're not going to get anywhere else. So it's a good thing. And he's saying in order to have wisdom in life, we have to understand we're going to have to go through some hard times if we're going to ever have wisdom. We're not going to get that by always going to a party and just laughing and enjoying and listening to music and we're all having a good time. We're not going to gain wisdom that way. And then he points out that wisdom comes by being willing to patiently wait till the end of the thing happens. Sometimes we're not going to be able to see it at the beginning. Surely oppression destroys a wise man's reason, and a bribe debases the heart. Well, we're talking about that in Exodus, that the bribe debases the heart of the person. And yes, Mr. Biden, it's a problem when you take bribes and you take money under the table. And Mrs. Clinton and others that have done that. It corrupts, it debases, it changes the person's whole focus of the justice and the purpose of their being in that office. But he says the end of a thing is better than the beginning. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. Do not say, why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. So in order for us to have wisdom, we have to be willing to wait and see, what is God's purpose in this? What is God going to do? How is God going to work this out? We cannot see it from the beginning. And it's a mark of wisdom to be able to have patience in life. Patience is a mark of wisdom. A person who is willing to say, I'm going to withhold judgment on this for now. I'm not going to go off half-cocked and say that I think I know everything about it when I don't. I'm going to wait and I'm going to consider this carefully. And I may not ever understand it, but I am going to wait and try to see the end before the beginning. Because sometimes it's in the end that you begin to see what the purpose of it was. Think about Joseph when he went out into Egypt and his brothers sold him into Egyptian slavery. And here he was a fine young man, and yet he was sold into Egyptian slavery and he's put into prison. And he spends 12, 13 years of his life in prison. But then finally, through the dreams that God revealed to him, he is brought in before the Pharaoh and he is elevated to a position of importance in the kingdom, second only to the Pharaoh. The famine comes and his own brothers come down to Egypt and they are saying, we don't have any food, we need food for our families. We hear that there's food here in Egypt. And so Joseph is able to negotiate with his family that they are able to come to live in Egypt. And this is all part of God's plan. So at the end of his life, he looks back and he said to his brothers, he says, do not hold this against me, or I do not hold this against you, because God meant it for good. I would suggest to us today, many people of us are we're sitting here scratching our heads and we're wondering what in the world is going on in our government, in our society today. We're seeing things happening that never happened before. Solomon is saying we need to be patient. We need to consider what is God's purpose in this. All of this is happening. What is God's purpose in it? All of this is happening under the providential control of God. Don't forget that. God is still the sovereign God. He's still in control over this world. And the fact that we're going through all of these turmoils and struggles that we're going through and the COVID and all the political upheaval and everything else and the lockdowns and the vaccine mandates and all this crazy stuff that they're trying to put upon us, we need to stop and say, but what is God's purpose in this? That's what I would like to know. What is God's purpose in it? And so we don't know that yet. Someday, as we look back, we're going to be able to say, I believe, now I understand better why God allowed this to happen. So do not be hasty in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. Fools get all upset, they get angry, they go off half-cocked and they say all sorts of things, and I don't like it, I'm upset about this, I don't know what's going on. But a patient person, they look back and they stand back and say, I want to see how God works this out. I want to see what His purpose is in this. Maybe God has a purpose that He is trying to bring our nation back to a spiritual foundation. He's already seeing that, look what has happened over these many years is I've blessed this nation. I've given them prosperity. I've given them freedom and all this. And look what has happened as a result of this. And is it better for them to go on down this path and leading to their own destruction, the way that they have chosen, the path that they have taken? Or is it better for me to step in and allow something terrible to happen so that people get down on their knees and they say, Lord, we need your help once again? What happened when we had 9/11? Look at that. People were saying, God bless America. And you're seeing that everywhere we're going up and down the highway. People are looking to God for help. And yet, how long did that last? Only for a month or two. And then those signs disappeared. Sometimes God understands something that we fail to understand is that in order for people to gain wisdom, they have to go through hard times. He says, do not say, why were the former days better than these? And many times we look at that and we say, I wish we could just go back and live in the 60s again. We could go back in the 70s and the 50s. You know, and we can debate on that because some of you are would say the 30s, you know. But for me, I would probably say the 50s. That was good times living in the 50s. But Solomon, he says, don't say that. There's no benefit in that. The 50s, there was plenty of bad things happening back in the 50s. Don't forget that. It wasn't all roses in the 50s. Every time has its good and its bad. And you know what? We're living in the 2021 years, and we're living in the present. We're not living in the 50s. And we need to have the reality to look at how are we living now? What does God want me to do now? What is He trying to teach me now in these circumstances? So don't be thinking, why were the former days better than these? They really weren't. But it's not going to change anything to be speculating about things like that. What we need to do is understand, I am living in the present. This is where I am. This is the reality. It might be the hard reality, but I need to learn the lesson. God is trying to teach me something. He's trying to teach all of us something. He's trying to teach us wisdom. And if he can help us to teach us to have wisdom and life, then we're going to be prepared for whatever comes next. So he says here that wisdom is the thing that we need to have. We need to have wisdom. Wisdom is good with an inheritance and profitable to those who see the sun. For wisdom is a defense, as money is a defense. But the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. You see, money doesn't do that. Money doesn't give life to those who have it. Wisdom gives life to those who have it. But wisdom is a defense. It's a shelter. Like money is a shelter. Many people, that is what people like about having money, is it's a shelter. You can go in there and you can feel safe. You can feel secure. I've got money. I've got my bank account. I've got my 401k. I've got my retirement. It's all planned out. And so it's a shelter. It feels safe. But he says wisdom is a defense. Wisdom is good. It is profitable. And the difference is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. It gives joy. It gives happiness. It gives contentment. It gives the ability to cope, the ability to deal with life. And when life comes as hard things to us, wisdom, we can deal with it. Because we understand that God has a purpose. We need to wait and see, what is God going to do? How is God going to work this out? And then we'll be able to look back on it and we'll see, wow, that's amazing what God did there. How he worked this whole thing out. So he says in verse 13 and 14, consider the work of God. For who can make straight what he has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider. Surely God has appointed the one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him. See, God has placed these limitations upon us. We cannot know what's going to come. God is the only one that knows. We can have prognosticators. We can have people, political pundits, that can say, oh, here's what's going to happen next. If the economy is going to crash, you know, we're going to have another depression. They're going to try to set up a global government here. And we have all these different opinions on what is going to happen. But the fact is, nobody knows. The only one that knows is God. So consider the work of God. Consider the purpose of God. Consider what God is doing in all of this. What is he trying to teach us? For who can make a straight what he has made crooked? He pointed out that earlier in the book, that who can bring something out of what is crooked and make it straight? We can't do it. We can't solve all the problems. We can't say, well, we get busy and we'll get another good president in there the next time around the election comes. We'll elect a family-friendly or a conservative or someone who will uphold biblical principles. We can't make it straight what's crooked. We have to face the reality. It's a mess. It's a big mess what's going on right now. And we can't solve it. But what we can do is we can consider the work of God. What is God doing? What is God saying? What is he thinking? What is he going to teach us out of this? What is the lesson that we need to learn? In the day of prosperity, be joyful. When we have good times, we should enjoy them. We say, thank you, Lord, for these good times that we have. We know it comes from you. We give you the glory. We give you the credit. We give you the praise. But when the day of adversity comes, consider. Consider the work of God. What is God trying to teach us through this? God is in control. This is under His providential control, everything that is going on. God is allowing it to happen. He has a purpose. What is that purpose that He is trying to teach us? It's like in the book of James, it says in James chapter 1, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." So that is what God wants us to be. He wants us to be complete. He wants us to have wisdom. He wants us to grow in our faith through this experience and look to Him as the one who's going to solve these problems. We're not going to make it straight. It's too crooked. But God has a purpose. Consider the purpose of God. And we need to accept our circumstances. We can't go back and live in the 80s. We can't reverse history. We are where we are. And we're here because that's where we were created to be. We are created to live in these times. So what is God doing? What is He teaching? What is His purpose? So we need to gain wisdom, is the bottom line. Solomon is saying, wisdom is a beautiful thing, but wisdom doesn't come easy. And sometimes you have to take a rebuke. Somebody comes up and gives you a rebuke. They say, "You know what? There's something in your behavior, your attitude that I think should be changed." We don't like to hear that. And yet, he's saying, sometimes we need to accept that. That can help us. God does that with us, I believe. Sometimes He sends us adversity so that there's a lesson that He's trying to teach us. And we need to be open to that. Well, thank you for your attention this morning. And we do extend the invitation of Jesus this morning to anyone who is here that has not come to commit your life to Jesus Christ in obedience to the gospel. We want to close our service by singing the song of invitation to invite you to do that. If you're ready to come and obey the Lord, we invite you to do so this morning as we stand and sing.
There's a fountain free, 'tis for you and me. Let us haste away to its brink. There's a fountain of love from the source of